The riots at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, 2021. That is our topic right now during this portion of Vocal Point. Where do we go from here? Our guest for this segment is Dr. Richard Land. He is the president of Southern Evangelical Seminary. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Dr. Land, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you. Happy New Year.
Yeah, thank you. Same to you. Well, what a way to, you know, begin the new year with a bang and end the Trump administration with a bang, and it's awful. But go ahead and get your initial comments on what happened on Wednesday, January 6th at the U.S. Capitol.
Well, I was appalled. Every person who loves freedom and every person who loves self-government should be appalled. You cannot have political violence. When you do this, you undermine the rule of law. And the rule of law is a very precious thing that very few countries have, to the extent that we have had it, and we're losing it and by disregarding it. I just couldn't believe it when I saw the intrusion into the Capitol. And it shows you that this isn't a conservative versus liberal issue. It isn't a Republican versus Democrat issue. It is a right versus wrong issue. Mm. And in our constitutional system, we have the right to peaceful redress of grievance. And I think that we have to hold to the fact that you just never resort to political violence. Now, it's interesting that the left has a double standard. Kamala Harris, the vice president-elect, said in July that people had been rioting, they were going to continue to riot, and that nobody could stop them. And she applauded that during when the Black Lives Matter people were rioting. But now she's singing a different tune. It's 100% of the time, political violence is unacceptable if you want to have the rule of law. And the rule of law is the best guarantee for individual liberties.
Amen. Now, there are some reports. In fact, I saw this from Mo Brooks, who's a congressman who was one of those who said, you know, we ought to not, rush into the electoral, decision because of potential, you know, irregularities of the voting, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, he said that there were some signs that maybe some Antifa people had infiltrated crowds of Trump supporters. I don't know. I know we haven't. We don't know the full facts yet.
Well, it wouldn't be shocking if they did. The Black Lives Matter people and the Antifa people, they're wrong and they're foolish, but they're not stupid. And it would be very smart of them to have some provocateurs infiltrate that crowd and try to get them going in the direction of doing what they did. Because it's extremely harmful to conservatism. And frankly, I think that Donald Trump drove a stake through his political career that morning when he spoke to that rally. I think that any chance of him moving forward and running again or being a significant political figure was severely damaged, because he was perceived as inciting people to riot.
Mm-hmm. Did you actually hear his speech? Because I listened to it as it was happening live. I heard most of it. And, it was kind of a rehashing of all the things that Giuliani and Jenna Ellis and others have said about the voting irregularities and things like that. But I guess at the end of the day, he had all those people there and they're all frustrated. And it's like, well, you know, a great injustice has been carried out here, and we the people have had our will thwarted. And then you see these, you know, the pitchfork brigade,
and basically said go down there and do something about it. That's basically what he said.
Yeah, so that's the problem right there. It's like, well, what are they supposed to do other than maybe pray, you know, and ask for God to, you know, reveal the terrible things? I mean, what were those suitcases in the middle of the night, you know, in Fulton County, Georgia?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, the Republicans have nobody to blame but themselves, because they should have been paying attention during the summer and the early fall when Democrats were going to court and were subverting the law and getting and using local courts and state courts to subvert the law. The Constitution says the state legislature is the one who deals with this. And, you know, they shouldn't have been shocked that the Democrats cheat. All Rules for Radicals says anything, you know, the end justifies the means. When Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, which is the Bible for the Democrats, says whatever, you know, the end justifies the means. You can do whatever you want to as long as your end is justified in your sight. And they should have known the Democrats were going to cheat. They should have been much better prepared to try to stop them. And then they should have been. Why wasn't Lindsey Graham holding investigatory and judicial committee hearings 2 weeks after the election? Not now. And he's no longer chairman now.
Hmm.
And I hold Donald Trump partially responsible for that.
Hmm.
I think Donald Trump lost those two seats in Georgia.
How?
By being dwelling upon himself and not having any concern about the Republican Party and about the two seats in Georgia. When he comes up and says, we got to give every person $2,000 instead of the $600 a person. Well, I happen to agree with him on the policy, but what he did was he put a situation in place where Joe Biden goes to Georgia and says, if you want $2,000, vote for the two Democrats. Because the Republican Senate's the only one holding this up. Vote for them, you'll get the $2,000.
Mm.
That didn't help in a very close election. It hurt.
Yeah.
It hurt him badly. It hurt them badly. And his unremitting critique of the governor and of the
Secretary of State.
Of the Secretary of State. Now, I happen to agree with him, but somebody should have said to him, or he should have listened when they said, this is not going to help you win these two seats in Georgia. Once he had lost the election, he needed to be focused on winning those two seats in Georgia, not trying to focus on himself and what relates to him. And so he gave away a lot of his legacy because they're going to tear it down.
Oh yeah, that's so true. Yeah, it's as if his whole career, political career, ended with a bang. You know, a literal bang. But so where do we go from here?
It ended with a thud. It ended with a thud.
Yeah, that's so true. Where do we go from here?
Well, we need to continue to pray as Christians. And, you know, pessimism is a sin for Christians. We know how it ends. It may be that God is judging us as a country. I certainly can't complain if he is. We certainly deserve it. Any country that has practiced child sacrifice through abortion the way we have certainly can't complain if God sends judgment. We need to be faithful. We need to keep involved. We need to stand for the right as we know to do the right and can see it. And we need to encourage others to do the same thing and work and pray for the great spiritual awakening that we must have. You know, I've been involved in public policy since I was a seminary graduate 50 years ago. And the whole time I've known that we're not going to cure what ails us as a country through political process and through public policy. All we've been doing, and it's a very important thing to do, is trying to minimize the damage and restrain evil until we have a spiritual awakening and a reformation. Without a spiritual awakening and a reformation, we are America is doomed. We may stay intact, but we will not be the country we were. We will not be the country we could have been. We will go the way of all flesh.
Mm. Well, this is, I agree with you, by the way, totally about the whole thing about revival and you know, a true new great awakening. In fact, as a student of history, it was amazing what God did in the mid-1700s, beginning with Jonathan Edwards and then George Whitefield. George Whitefield was probably the first person, human being, to go into all 13 colonies that we know of. And when he died, he was almost like a celebrity. But the bottom line is he reached, you know, literally hundreds of thousands.
On,
yeah.
I mean, you know,
yeah, yeah.
This is before,
preaching
before
the
days of public address systems.
Right.
He could preach to 5,000 people, and they could all hear him outside.
Yeah.
Benjamin Franklin actually did an experiment and went to hear him speak and walked around the edges of the crowd, and there was about 15,000 people, and he could hear him. He could understand him. Now, that's a set of lungs on you, buddy.
Yeah, that's true. And then, yeah, Ben Franklin even said that, you know, he was describing one time when he understood Whitfield was going to be making an appeal for his orphanage in Georgia. And yeah. Franklin had all this money on him, and he's like, okay, I'll give him, you know, the cheap little things, you know. And then as Whitfield kept preaching, all right, I'll give him the silver, you know. And then finally by the end, all right, I'll give him the gold, I'll give him everything. Boom, you know, and he gave this big money. But Whitfield was
he also,
so
by the way,
influential.
Fairly humorous, but it's a true story. Whitfield was cross-eyed.
Yeah.
And one wag said that, you know, one of the things that made him such an effective preacher is he could put one eye on God and one eye on the people at the same time.
All right. So the church is in bad shape, it would seem to me. It's very possible that the new legislature could bring in all kinds of different things that curtail even more freedom of religion, freedom of speech. How do we deal with all this?
We protect our freedoms by exercising them. That means we obey Caesar when we can. But when Caesar forces us to make a choice between the government and God, we obey God. God said, "Do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together." In case you're in any doubt, I'm with John MacArthur on that.
Mm-hmm.
God told us to worship. We're going to worship. We're going to take precautions, but we're going to worship. And they said, "Well, what if they throw you in jail?" And he said, "Well, I've never had a jail ministry. I guess I can start one."
Yeah, that's good. So
that's what the Apostle Paul did. They put him in the Philippian jail. He started a jail ministry.
Yeah, and Paul even said to the Philippians, you know, "For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain."
That's right.
He was totally sold out. Okay, so let me ask you this. There are a lot of Christians, it seems to me, in the last few years, who've begun to get involved in the political process. I wonder if some of them will feel so discouraged by the recent events, including November 3rd's election, with, you know, irregularities or reports of irregularities, that why bother? Because, you know, it's not going to make a difference. They're going to steal my vote anyway.
Well, you know, first of all, we have the right to peaceful redress of grievance. We can help elect people who will make sure that those restrictions don't take place. Secondly, we will not abide by those restrictions. We were going to continue to obey God rather than man and do the right thing. And as Francis Schaeffer pointed out back in the 1980s, winning is not what God called us to do. Being faithful is what God called us to do.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we win or not is up to Him.
That's an excellent point.
And you know, one of the things that comes from having lived many years, and I'm the same age as President Trump, so I'm 74, is I remember how despondent I was when Jimmy Carter won, because I knew what a terrible president he would be. He actually turned out to be worse than I thought he was going to be, but I knew he was going to be terrible. But if Jimmy Carter hadn't won, we never would have gotten Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan would never have been president had Jimmy Carter not beaten Gerald Ford.
Hmm.
Think about that. Ronald Reagan, you know, one of the most consequential presidents in American history. If I was despondent when George H.W. Bush lost to Bill Clinton,
mm-hmm.
but if that hadn't happened, Newt Gingrich wouldn't have taken over the Congress. I mean, you realize that I was born in 1946, and that was the last time the Republicans controlled the House of Representatives until 1994.
Wow. And we've controlled it, you know, back and forth. We don't control it now, but we're five seats away.
We would never have had welfare reform and a lot of other things had we not had Newt Gingrich and the Republican-controlled Congress.
All right. Well, we're basically out of time, but thank you so much for sharing with us the website of Dr. Richard Land's school, which is Southern Evangelical Seminary, is ses.edu. Thanks so much for being with us, Doctor. Appreciate it.
Well, Thank you for having me, and let's continue to be faithful.
Amen. Okay, God bless now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.